All right, good to be with you. You can text the show if you're up with us this morning, listening to the show, let us know. 713-572-4610. Astros have been so up and down this year. This is a text. Played well against good teams, played down to the competition. They can maintain the level of play from this 17-game stretch over the first over the next 2 weeks, I'll feel much more optimistic. That's from Travis. They've got a patch of schedule that's conducive to that coming up.
The craziest thing, you know, we talked earlier about, obviously, if you'd had good production out of your cleanup hitter all season long, mostly Christian Walker, could be a much different story right now. I mean, the other big...
Even slightly below average production from him. He's been abysmal.
The other big what if is just, if what if they were just average hitting with the bases loaded? I mean, they're so bad with the bases loaded. They're the worst team in the league with the bases loaded. They entered yesterday as the worst team in the league with the bases loaded, and then they ended two innings with the bases loaded. Right? If you would have just been, if you would have been in the 30th percentile at least, that's a few more wins right there.
Yep, no doubt.
Some more glorious walk offs and what have you.
Thank you. Yeah. So it's Look, the pitching staff is still – the starting rotation is still going to be heavily a work in progress here as they move forward. But, again, they're playing – the next 20 or 25 games are not against world beaters. You know, if they – I'm with you. If they maintain this level of play, you know, let's say next 25 games, you know, if they go – they can go 16 and, you know, 16 and 9, 15 and 10, something like that easily over these next 25 games for
sure. So, Altuve ends up with 8 hits in this series, and we had put him out of the circle of trust right before this series began, and he may very well be out of his slump. The Altuve being back
to himself. You're welcome. You're welcome, Houston.
Yes.
Okay.
You're welcome, Houston.
Thanks
you're welcome,
flowers.
Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
So Yordan Alvarez is the next one. The things that it's okay to wish for is, okay, can we get normal Yordan and normal Altuve?
Yep.
And that so far it looks good so far with Altuve. It's just a matter of Yordan. Hopefully his hand was the big reason behind that extended slump, the longest slump he's had in his career.
Yeah, and again, this is my request to the internet. I don't need to see any more videos of Yordan running the bases as if that means squat to me. Like, hey, here's Yordan coming back from his hand injury running the base. Unless he's crab walking around the bases, then I'm interested.
If he's doing a bear crawl.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, crab walk, yeah. Bear crawl is safer at least.
Yeah. Either one. Any form of getting around the bases that involves using his hands, a handstand, if he wants to handstand his way around the bases, or cartwheel, if he wants to do a series of cartwheels around the bases, then I will take that as something that would indicate he's coming back soon. Until then, I don't give a crap about him running the bases at all.
If I saw a video of him doing the pommel horse, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, like,
he is ready to go.
They put a pommel horse at each base, and he has to jettison himself over them like a gymnast. Mm-hmm. Then I'll be like, okay, the hand looks good. But him jogging around the bases, put it this way, if that at all is affecting his hand, like if he's now able to run without pain, then I'm going to be like, okay, well, then it must have been a pretty damn severe hand injury.
That was a milestone that they were looking for. Right, yeah, right. I wonder, I am mildly disappointed that, you know, last weekend or so, I started thinking, okay, by next weekend, by Memorial Day weekend, surely Yordan will be back out there.
Yeah.
And now I'm just put back into, I don't know, man. Like, whatever. Whenever he shows, Kyle Tucker mode of, okay, whenever he shows up, he shows up.
I think it's going to be he shows up, and they've already said he's not going to do a rehab stint. Like, Yordan's a guy that doesn't need to get his timing back. Like, he's a guy who picks up a bat, and he just starts hitting again. And I'm sure he's doing plenty of swinging the bat in the cage and whatnot, trying to get some semblance of timing back. But I think it's going to be one of those things, Seth. Like, we're going to see a tweet from one of the people that covers the team, Brian McTaggart, Chandler Rome, Matt Kawahara, probably all three of them at the same time, would have been Mark Berman back in the day, that says Yordan Alvarez is being taken off the IL and he'll be batting third that night or batting fourth that night in the lineup. I think it's going to be one of those things. Like, as soon as we find out, he's back in the lineup again. Someone makes a good suggestion. If Altuve plays like this outside of the circle of trust, maybe keep him out?
Keep him out. Oh,
LOL.
Boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. That feels... Whenever we try to get too clever with it, it feels like it blows up in our face.
Well, that's true. That's also somebody who probably doesn't realize how painful it was to leave him out of that circle of trust.
Yeah, it's really, really hard on us.
Yes.
If you want the circle of trust to continue, then you got to make some concessions for the fact that Sean and I are human, damn it.
We have emotions. We cry. We bleed.
Yeah.
Okay?
You can't just keep sending us back out there to the front. every damn night.
That's it.
All right, need some R&R at some point.
We need some load management.
Yeah.
All right, so Bill Barnwell does this piece, you know, this time of year, it's graduation, it's, you know, yearbook signings and things like that. Superlatives for each of the AFC teams. Bill Barnwell, ESPN, and lengthy NFL writer, writes long articles, but they're good. Superlative for the Texans, most likely to apologize with a flurry of gifts.
What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Okay, well, let's see what kind of shade this is. All right, here
we
go.
What high school did he go to?
The Texans. I know, that's a weird superlative. I feel like Barnwell might have won that at some point. That's why he's putting it in there. The Texans have gotten C.J. Stroud a card, I suppose, but after getting their star, meaning a greeting card, but after getting their star quarterback battered throughout the season before eventually getting injured in last season's divisional round loss to the Chiefs, an apology. Oh, remember that game, Seth, where he's limping around out there against the – remember the? I mean, I know you remember the playoff game.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that he was –
he was like being helped to the sideline.
Yes, I had forgotten that at some point I'm like, man, it doesn't even matter if they win this game. He's going to be gimpy as hell when they go up to Buffalo next week. Barnwell continues, they simply couldn't protect C.J. Stroud. Though quarterbacks have a meaningful influence on their own pressure and sack rate, Stroud was pressured within 2.5 seconds on more than 18% of his dropbacks. The only other starters who were pressured within 2.5 seconds more often were Drake May, Kirk Cousins, and Geno Smith. Barnwell goes on to talk about how they cleaned out the Tunsil-Mason-Green dynamic in there, and they brought in a bunch of new guys. They've got 9 guys now, all of whom you could viably make a case for to be among the 5 starting offensive linemen for this team.
Yeah.
So just bring in a bunch of gifts for CJ.
They brought in, I guess the difference too is when you compare it to the strategy of the Bears and the Vikings, who had offensive line issues but were way more aggressive about going out and signing guys. They got named free agents. Yeah. The Texans, they shopped in bulk, I think is how Barnwell put it. And they got a lot of guys that are competitive and could be starting on a lot of teams, but they're not necessarily anything that gets you super excited about, oh, yeah, that guy's going to change or transform things.
Yeah,
I think that – and this can blow up. This can go in many different directions, but I do think that the Texans looked at it as more of an issue about the offensive line in total – including Bobby Slowick and his scheming, that there was more to be done than just bring in better players, that you had to tear this thing down to the studs and then start rebuilding. And they're in the infancy of that, and it's going to – like, if it doesn't work out, it's going to be obvious why it didn't, because you didn't do these same aggressive moves. If it does work out, then it's because, they actually fix things systemically.
Yeah.
And even though they don't have as many – individually named players, that as a group they operate a lot better.
Bears actually.
So I applaud the theory and the strategy, but you got to pull it off now too.
Yep, the spirit is there. I get that. The Bears actually signed Tooney to an extension this weekend. He was in his contract year. They gave him 2 more years, I think, at 17, 18.
Joe Tooney came over from Kansas City.
Kansas City, yeah. So there's that.
So basically his superlative, most team to end up with a flurry of gifts.
Yeah.
Is that they're going to go out and spend to get more assets for CJ?
I think his contention here is that these offensive linemen are the gifts that he's getting. I think, you know, that he's, he doesn't mention the receivers they drafted and the running back they drafted and the offensive lineman they drafted and getting Christian Kirk. They've done a lot of things. They have turned over a lot on that side of the ball.
Okay, I see.
You know?
So their surprise for this offseason is that, hey, they apologized with a flurry of gifts.
With a flurry of gifts, yeah. With a flurry.
But I guess, but the gifts were just kind of not as
tantalizing.
In free agency, at least.
You
go out and you draft 2 wide receivers and draft an offensive lineman. That's helping, theoretically helping the offense out. They just got to work out.
Yep, absolutely. We'll have this audio in the 9 o'clock hour. I forgot to send it to Ben over the weekend. Rob Ninkovich was out there again on either a radio show or a podcast, Seth, just lauding to the moon and back on Cole Popovich again, Texans offensive line coach. Well, because Ninkovich was in New England when they let Popovich go over, you know, some vaccination COVID stuff in 2020. And Popovich, as Ninkovich, he makes the point, we'll have it later in the show, but he's a student of Dante Scarnecchia, who's considered, you know, one of, if not the greatest offensive line coach of all time.
Yeah. So he's done that a couple times now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was Colt Popovich? Just he didn't want to get vaccinated.
Yes.
So he ended up, he coached at high school or the college where he could for a year, whatever. There was a year where he was out of the league.
Franklin High School. He was at Franklin High School in Franklin, Massachusetts for a year. Then he went to Troy, and then he was with the Texans in 2023, and now he's the offensive. Now he is. This, I don't think this is hyperbole. He's one of the most pivotal guys in that building for this upcoming season. Yeah. I'm not being hyperbolic by saying that. Like Cole Popovich is supremely important.
Right. No, the Nick Caley being able to actually design a run game, and then Cole Popovich being able to coach it. I think just from the way that the team talked about it in measured doses, you know, this offseason, it does sound like there was a disconnect between Bobby Slowick and Chris Strausser.
Yeah.
And that whose fault it was, you know, how could it have changed? I don't know. But they didn't think Bobby Slowick was the guy to fix it.
Yeah.
Caley and Popovich have a prior relationship. I'm guessing that just that at the very least, they're going to have a better working relationship and be on the same page more so than Slowick and Strausser were.
It's funny, along those lines, Nick Shook of NFL.com had an article late last week that he listed the top departures that are going to impact NFL teams. You know, teams lose a guy, and that's going to have a big impact because he's not there anymore. C.J. Gardner-Johnson was on the list, which is interesting. I'll get to that in a second. I thought it was interesting that Laramie Tunsil was not on this list.
Disrespect?
Nick Shook, I don't know if it's disrespect. I just found it intriguing. As highly criticized as the Texans were, not by everybody, but by, like, outside of Houston, I don't know if I can think of a Texans move that's been made since I've been covering the team, Seth, for the last however many years, 15, 18 years, whatever it is, that had a greater disparity between how it was viewed in Houston and how it was viewed out of Houston than the Laramie Tunsil trade. And I just find this interesting that Nick Shook is not a Houston guy. He's a national NFL.com guy, and he doesn't have Laramie Tunsil on this list. He's got about 10 guys on here. He's got Dante Fowler is on here.
Yeah.
Carlton Davis, the cornerback, is on here for the Lions. Had a great game against the Texans. Rico Dowdle is on this list, the running back for the Cowboys. The journeyman running back for the Cowboys. Laramie Tunsil is nowhere to be found on this list in terms of his former team missing him.
There is a little bit. I started to hear here and there on podcasts and in articles, you know, people bringing up like, well, you know, you do have to think, the guy's a premier pass protector who's been traded twice in his career. Usually teams really do. That's the one last thing they will not relinquish. If you're the Browns, you're not going to let go of Joe Thomas because at least you've got that. And,
especially if you have a star quarterback who's a pocket guy.
The fact that he's been traded twice, I think people have realized, like, okay, well, there's a gap there. There's a gap between some of his PFF grades and maybe how the team feels about
it. I'm guessing, too, like people from the team, whether it's Nick Caserio or D'Amico Ryans or maybe other people. I mean, there's this whole network around the league with people that talk to various reporters. I think a lot of that criticism came in the few days after the trade, and I'm guessing there were some private conversations had about, like, hey, here's why we did it. Explained it. And then once you explain it to a few of the big voices out there and they're telling, I mean, it's a viral thing, you know, you get the explanation out there and you know, that's kind of how it goes. Here's what they said about CJ Gardner-Johnson. Of course, his former team is the Philadelphia Eagles. And Nick Shook says Gardner-Johnson's not played for the same team in consecutive years since 2020 and 2021. That is worth noting.
And and people bring that up too. I don't know. There's something going on. Yeah.
Now the Eagles brought him back, so he wasn't toxic enough for them to not. I'm not saying he's toxic at all. He's got an interesting back of the football card in terms of where the chronology of where he's worked. But he helped the Eagles win a Super Bowl. This is Shook talking now. Last season in his second stint with the team, fresh off a title, Philly traded him to the Texans with budgetary concerns in mind. Moves like that one can help the Eagles remain competitive, but such deals only work if the replacements produce. Enter Texas product on Andrew Mukaba, who's a safety they took in the second round. He's going to be asked to step in and fill the void right away. Might be. It will be no easy task, even on a talented defense. Meanwhile, Gardner-Johnson will aim to follow up a career-best season with a stellar campaign as a member of the Texans, where he's joining one of the best secondaries in the NFL. I think that's the big thing to note here. Like, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is coming off a hell of a season in Philly.
He has
a great year last year.
Philly's looking at it a little bit, I think, the way the Chiefs do with their defensive backs, is that you look at what Philadelphia did with two rookie defensive backs this past year. that they just probably feel really good in their ability to get the absolute most out of guys. They're like the Astros with their pitchers. Like, all right, we'll just develop another one. Okay, yep, this guy did some good things for us, but we'll develop another one.
Yeah, then they'll get Tommy John surgery, and we'll find more of them after that. Yeah,
yeah.
This would be like if it was the Astros thing, but all the DBs wound up with ACLs at the end of their stint, ACL surgery. So Tunsil not on there. Diggs isn't on this list either, which isn't surprising because he only played half the season for the Texans last year. But I feel like if he had played the full season at the level he was playing the 8 games he played, I mean, they were 6-2 in the 8 games Stephon Diggs played. He would have been on this list.
Well, no, and CJ was like, CJ took a notable dip specifically when Stephon Diggs went out. You look at his first half of the season, Stephon Diggs played 8 games, and then the last 9 games. With CJ without that quick outlet and with that guy that he could make those really tight window throws to, it just made the pass protection issues become that much more of an issue. And it wasn't, it was a different offense without Diggs in it.
Who is that this year? Is it Kirk? Who's the quick outlet guy?
I don't know if they're, it needs to be Kirk or Jalen Noel.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can do it at the level of Stephon Diggs,
right.
But that element was gone once Diggs was out there. And so Christian Kirk, yes, but I don't expect or need him to be as good as Stephon Diggs.
If you could bring back one, and this may be a trickier question now because they went and drafted a bunch of receivers and signed receivers and whatnot. If you could bring back one of Diggs or Tunsil, who would it be?
Diggs.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think Diggs was more of a swarm mindset guy.
Well, that's definitely the case.
Yeah, I think that he fit the culture of what they want, the culture that they have on defense. Diggs fits into that culture, whereas Laremy Tunsil doesn't. If you had to invite everybody to a defensive swarm party, they're gonna choose
Diggs.
They're gonna choose Stephon Diggs, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Because these are the athletes themselves. They're not like other people who can be bought off so quickly.
Diggs is more swarmy than Laremy Tunsil. There's no question about that. I'm just thinking about the party element to it. If you have a party with too many, I feel like if it's a party, you need at least a few guys that are kind of chill in the whole thing, you know, like otherwise
not in a swarm party. The swarm party is going to get out of control, Sean.
Okay.
That's the whole thing.
That's
without
right.
adults present and officials on the field, it's a melee.
It's not just
I'm not expecting people to like everybody to come out of this party alive, Sean.
Gotcha.
But it's, you got to be invited
party.
You got to be invited to the party to not survive.
I got you. That makes sense. I was just looking at your garden variety party. You're making this an actual party where swarm is the theme of this thing. Okay.
Yeah, this is a Netflix series.
Yeah. It won't last long. Not many episodes. Everybody dies. That's the
No, you parse it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
two
yeah.
main characters per season.
Yep. Yep.
I believe you're
wins,
serious about it.
Who
as
wins
a showrunner?
Who wins a swarm party among the Texans? If you had a swarm party and it's basically, because it sounds like it's basically Thunderdome.
It's like who's the last man standing?
Yes, who's the last
the
man
the swarm
standing?
Party? Probably Aziz.
You think?
I think so. Yeah. I think Aziz has something in him that even after he's
he's homeless
had two of his
at one
limbs
point.
Severed, he's still fighting.
I feel like he's a survivor. That's a good pick by you right there, I think. I was going to say, just based purely on the optics, Danielle Hunter. But you know I get wrapped up in height, weight, speed. You know,
Danielle and Will would both get duped into doing the right thing at some point.
Yeah.
If this is last man standing, at some point you're going to be able to convince Will that, like, hey, man, I've got kids and you don't. And Will will say, oh, dog, you're right, man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was being selfish.
This is like a version
Strike
of Survivor.
Strike me with that mace.
This is like a version of Survivor. I kind of like this. Hey, by the way, they're announcing.
No, Danielle and Will Hunter both. Ultimately, their gentlemanly dispositions would do them in.
Yep. Aziz. I think Kamari Lassiter would do well in that environment.
Oh, boy, that's a big wild card right there.
Yeah.
Because Kamari's got more of the crazy eyes.
Yes. Slap in the head and everything, you know?
Yeah, Aziz, it's more cold and calculating, whereas... Yeah. So Kamari, I think that he might wear himself out, though.
I feel like this is a power ranking we need to do at some point. This is almost like a version of the Circle of Swarm, but it's Circle of Swarm deathmatch is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All rules of society break down.
That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, Aaron Rodgers gave some clarity on his situation right now. Why is he not signed with a team? He did that on Joe Rogan's podcast. Meanwhile, his ex-girlfriend, Danica Patrick, was on Sage Steele's podcast.
Ow,
dishing,
this is, yeah.
Dish, this is good stuff. Dishing on what kind of boyfriend Aaron Rodgers was. Drama coming up next.